We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This is the Leftovers Podcast with Derek Kramer.
I'm going to say a stupid thing right now. Pudding. Where's my money?
Frank R. Curry.
I didn't say run through a wall. Do it again? Okay.
And Kyle Powell.
When the Sabres were actually in a playoff spot for the entire year.
On WGR550.com.
Welcome into another episode of Leftovers Podcast. Derek Kramer.
And Kyle Powell.
No Frank R. Curry. He's doing things. Making moves. Going on vacation soon. But not now. He's just working on other things and other stuff. Like, you know, paychecks and things like that. You know, money, important things.
Hood rat stuff.
Hood rat stuff, yes. Frank is working exclusively on hood rat stuff. What the hell are we? Great start to the podcast right there. You know what? I think we need to come up with it, Kyle. Let's just play a game right off the start of the podcast here. What is Frank doing when he's not in on the podcast days?
What is Frank doing?
Like, what is the quote-unquote hood rat stuff? I'm going to go with he's smashing drywall Kool-Aid man style.
Wow. So he's
getting paid, and he's just running through drywall. Like, wow. That's what he's doing.
Radio on. Hammer in hand.
No. It's just Kool-Aid just man style.
Punches to the wall.
He just runs through it. Oh yeah.
Through the walls.
Oh yeah. That's my go.
I think that's a good one.
I don't know why I thought of that.
I could see it.
Frank's just running through.
There's money to be made.
Yeah, you know. He's lost a tooth. He knows how to get through there. He's the gritty guy. He's that guy. He'll go through a wall for you. Actually, it's in the open.
That's right.
So, yes, there it is. Look at that. Frank is going through he's going through drywall. That's how he's getting his money right now. That's what's going on. Frank is running through drywall. You got a good one here? Or?
No, I'm going to go with the Kool-Aid man. I'm a fan of that.
Oh yeah. All right then. Oh yeah, there it is. We got Frank. He's not here. He's busting up drywall. So don't get hurt, Frank, because that's something that has been going on with a lot of Bills players in practice because of training camp and injuries, particularly on the offensive line right now. We're looking at a very unenviable position for the Bills.
Yeah, the latest victim,
Adrian Waddle
today with a torn quad.
It was not. It was broke today about the news. It happened yesterday
right at
practice. I went out there to check it out. It wasn't all that impressive. I didn't really take away too much out of practice that day. But I saw Adrian Waddle go down. They got the cart out for him, carted off of practice. And you know when the cart is brought out, it's a long-term injury, generally.
Yeah. Schefter breaking things this morning around 4 to 5 months for a timetable. Not ideal.
Not ideal, and it probably puts him out for the season.
Yeah.
So that's the latest blow, because Waddle was seen as a guy that'd be a swing tackle, a guy who could play on the left or right side based on whatever injury could happen. Now what do you do? Now there might be shuffling because there's a bunch of injuries at guard and at center still with Mitch Morse with the concussion protocol. They added a lot of linemen, and suddenly that is what's being put to the test. Irony. It's a real thing.
It'll get you. They're going through it right now.
We look to address the entire offensive line. What the hell is wrong with our offensive line?
That is the million dollar question.
It's one fell swoop right there. They look to revamp the entire thing, and now it looks like the biggest question mark again after paying so much attention to it. What do we get out of this, though? I mean, like, you need to be able to have some sort of cohesion with the offensive line front, and now Cody Ford's been playing different positions along the offensive line with the starting group. So now you don't even know where Cody Ford's going to play. Are you even going to be able to get the best five linemen out there at this point anymore? And Russell Bodine, a guy that a lot of people are thinking, oh, he might get cut. That's not the case anymore. He might be able to hang on to a role here because of the fact that Mitch Morse is in these dire straits right now with the concussion protocol. He's still in stage three. He hasn't been able to get onto the field yet. Yeah, you don't want to see it. And now, for me, I don't care about cohesion. Mitch Morse doesn't see the field in preseason. I'm good.
If he even has a chance, I mean, you're at the will of the recovery time of a guy with a concussion like that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that's tough. So, I'm a little worried about what happens there because the line was a true weak point last year. Getting an upgrade at center was seen as a huge thing for this team. And now, you might not see that upgrade. You might see the guy who was kind of a flop of a free agent signing with last season back under center again. I don't know what to do here. It's tough. I don't like this. It's going to worry me because Josh Allen could use all the help he can get on the offensive line. Because Allen at his most aggressive is rolling out of the pocket and throwing up a deep ball that should not be thrown because he's got to get out of there.
Yeah, so too can a guy like LeSean McCoy. You've made this point before. You want to see a good, solid O-line in front of him to make sure you have true optics on whether or not 2018 was the start of a downhill slide for a guy like McCoy or if it was he was just a victim of not being given
space.
Yeah,
that was one of the worst run-blocking lines I have seen last year.
Yeah, so it's crucial for a guy like him this year.
It's crucial for a guy like him. Frank Gore is a guy who can get you tough yardage if your line can at least hold steady on the scrimmage.
Yep.
And, of course, Devin Singletary is a guy who can try to be that hack-and-slash type of guy inside the tackles. You need something there, though. You need holes to be actually established. Last year, you were getting none of that. That's why Chris Ivory looked more effective at times than LeSean McCoy is because Ivory's just a straight downhill runner. He's not going to do anything. He's not going to try to see anything.
That's right.
And if there's a body in his way, he's going to try to run through that guy, too. And oftentimes, there were bodies in the way. Why? Because there was no solid blocking. So you just run behind an offensive lineman, push that guy forward, and the next thing you know, you've got 3 to 4 yards. Maybe. I don't know what the hell to think about this offensive line at that point, if that's the case. And now you lose a swing tackle who could have been useful for you as an injury replacement throughout the season. He's gone for the year. What does that mean? In terms of the tackle position, I'm not sure how much. Because they signed so many players that you hope that the competition allows for you to keep some of that depth. But we're seeing it right now that Feliciano and Long, the two of the guards that were signed, they were both limited in practice today. Which is comforting. But they also didn't get any work in with the heavy stuff today.
Sal's story went up 10 minutes ago on the WGR website with the first and second team O-lines without a guy like Waddle. And you were talking about Ford being a plug-and-play guy right now with the amount of injuries they have. They had him at right guard today on the first team with Deion Dawkins, Quentin Spain, Russell Bodine, Inseke. And then Connor McDermott, Vlad Dukas, Ike Bodker, Wyatt Teller, and DeAndre Wesley, second team runners.
Now, here's your problem. Feliciano, Morse, and Long all being banged up means that Inseke has to be the starting tackle. Because Ford has to play guard. Because you're trying to get your best five out there.
Right.
It would be a friggin' nightmare if we saw Vlad Dukas not only make the roster, but be a backup. So these injuries have to stop a little bit here. Obviously, there's nothing you can really do about it. Sometimes that's just bad luck. It does hurt that you lost a swing tackle, too. Because Waddle could play both sides for you. You want Morse to get healthy because he's going to be able to stabilize the entire line. Feliciano and Long, I mean, hopefully those two can at least get healthier so that you have versatile pieces that can play guard or center. But I think the last thing that people needed to see was that Vlad Dukas is getting snaps with the second team.
Yeah, we'll see if that remains the same tomorrow, if anything, or there's more of a merry-go-round type carousel scenario in that department. And then, yeah, see what happens Thursday, too, because before you know it, preseason is here.
Yeah, we're here.
We're actually already kind of here.
Yeah, the next podcast is going to be a preseason game.
Indianapolis Colts.
Which,
they were in the news
by
today.
The way, Jeremy had to go ahead and ruin my morning. I was filling in as Brayton was out in Rochester with Howard and Jeremy, and a name was brought up with the Indianapolis Colts that I forgot about, and now bleep. Bleep me for everything and all that I know and exist about. Jacoby Brissett will probably start this game because Andrew Luck is banged up. He will not play. Do you know who the next quarterback is going to be coming onto the field in Buffalo?
For Indy?
Yes. You're not going to get it. It's Chad Kelly.
Oh.
Yeah, that's right.
That's
he went
right.
there. Which means that post-game is going to involve, why did we never sign Chad Kelly or give this kid a shot? Because he's got the last name and the family, and he went 12 of 17 against your backups. I can already see it. Crap. Great. I'm getting yelly. I'm getting yelly because, again, I hate you if you say the words, the Bills should have signed or drafted Chad Kelly. I hate you. You suck. You're going to give me high blood pressure, and you're going to kill me. Part of that also has to do with my diet, but nonetheless, mostly you, Chad Kelly's stan. Yes. Why didn't we take a chance on the guy who got himself kicked off of Clemson and then got himself into off-field trouble and then walked into someone else's house and got beaten with a vacuum tube? Why didn't we give that guy a shot? Huh. It's an interesting question. Probably because his talent doesn't match the off-field problems that he has. For starters. Second, because you attach a name to the probably only legitimate quarterback that this history of this franchise has even had in recent memory with Jim Kelly, because he is the nephew, and therefore, oh, there must be by proxy some form of Hall of Famer in Chad Kelly there. No. I spent way too much damn time on quarterbacks and watching players and realizing that Chad Kelly was not going to be it, Chief. I remember doing laps around this freaking studio when they drafted Nathan Peterman in the fifth round that year. Because it meant that they weren't going to get Chad Kelly. Yes, that guy. The guy who decides to be one of the worst quarterbacks in recent memory when it comes to performances.
Got you to do laps,
got
huh?
me to run laps of joy and happiness. Only to just watch me look really stupid. But that's what I would have rather had. Because, yeah. Let's give that guy who's got off-field problems more pressure because of the fact that he's part of this family of this quarterback that was really good for Buffalo. Do you get how things work? How narratives work? How pressure works? Because you're that same fan that then wants to drive him out and say, oh, he needed to be more like his uncle. He needs to be more focused, blah, 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 blah. My head's going to explode, Kyle. And I'm only talking about a hypothetical. I hope the Bills' backups on defense run train. No points. No points. Understand? Kevin Johnson, EJ Gaines, you have a very important mission on Thursday. Shut it down. Do you understand? The headache that you're that we here are going to have to deal with. But that's the great news. They have Kevin Johnson. They might not have EJ Gantz because he was banged up yesterday in practice, suffered a groin injury. He threw his helmet on the ground. He was not very happy about what had happened because it was a collision with Andre Roberts on a deep ball. Next thing you know, Gaines comes up gingerly, and he threw his helmet down. He was not happy. But Kevin Johnson's still there. Kevin Johnson's looked pretty good.
Good.
I've liked what Kevin Johnson's done.
Good, good.
And now there's more competition because with Gaines getting hurt like this, there's a spot that could be had. You need to be available. And Gaines had injury problems with McDermott's regime a couple years ago. They can look into that and go, I don't know if it's worth keeping him. Are we going to be able to bank on him being here every week for this team?
Yeah, right. They already thought about it once.
They already thought about it once.
They pulled the trigger once.
They let him go.
Yeah.
And then they brought him back. And this is where that sort of thing comes. You have to be available. And we'll talk about that sort of thing more because I'm just... No, I don't want to go back on that rant. That was a dark place. I don't want to go back there. Let's drop that, actually. And I know some people that know me are going to try to piss me off, and they're going to go ahead and my friends are going to send me things about Chad Kelly, and I'm going to hate every one of them, and I'm going to shove my boot in a place. Oh, man. So, yeah. There's actually stakes with this game on Thursday. For me, personally, I'm going to have a lot hanging on this game in the second half. It's going to be Tyree Jackson against Chad Kelly. And, I hope Tyree Jackson goes ahead and does something so that we don't have to hear as much about Chad Kelly. Oh, my God. I'm already preparing for disaster, Kyle. Preseason week one, and I'm preparing for disaster with postgame. I don't even have to screen these calls anymore. I just don't want to hear it.
Jaded, huh? A little jaded?
No. I'm woke for this. I'm woke for this. I'm ready. I'm already ready, and I'm dreading it. But yet... Did I sound like someone who's jaded? I sounded like someone who's very angry.
Little of this, little of that.
So, I don't know. Maybe I'm just overreacting. Maybe I'm just lamenting things that are going to happen. Like, Friday's show could be just me screaming into the void when I do have to screen calls for Howard and Jeremy. That just might be me. I might just be screaming into the void. They'll look at me like, what the hell's wrong with that guy? Well, now you know what the hell's wrong with this guy over here. But yesterday at Bills camp and at practice, there's someone that continues to show up, and he's taking advantage of opportunity, and that's Tommy Sweeney, the 7th-round tight end out of Boston College, a guy that has been getting reps with ones because of the fact that, quite simply, nobody else is available. Tyler Kroft, hurt. Jason Kroom, hurt. Dawson Knox, hurt. All of them, not practicing. Tommy Sweeney, not just taking those snaps. He's looking good doing it, which is kind of impressive. And now I said something yesterday that I could get cold-taked for.
Oh, boy.
Do you remember when I left Jason Kroom off of our way-too-early 53-man projections?
I do. And then Ryan Talbot of New York Upstate echoed that.
Yes. Here's the thing. We might have gotten the name wrong based on the opportunity. Tommy Sweeney might be ready to take someone's job at someone's expense simply because of the fact that they're not there and they're not practicing.
Well, sure. There are opportunities to be had.
There's opportunities to be had, and that's the problem right now, is that for a guy like Jason Kroom, he needed this training camp. And right now he's not getting it, and Tommy Sweeney's there, and they've invested a higher pick in Dawson Knox. So I don't think they're going to cut a third rounder right away simply because he's been banged up. It could be a guy like Jason Kroom who gets cut because of this sort of thing. The question now is just going to be who gets let go. For example, if Knox comes back and Kroom comes back and they play a great preseason, do they go ahead and just let Lee Smith go, for example? I don't know. They kind of respect the veteran presence that is there. But do they instead allow Smith to be an H-back and then Pat DeMarco gets let go? I don't know. He's got special teams value. But if Kroom and Knox come back healthy in the preseason, they light things up and Sweeney keeps pace, you might have to decide between Smith and DeMarco. Because they've been using DeMarco in H-back settings because of the fact that there have been no more tight ends playing. Someone's going to get their job lost and claimed by Tommy Sweeney if he keeps this up. Yes, I know. Don't overreact to preseason or training camp. But guess what? I'm seeing what I saw, and I know what the coaches are seeing too. Tommy Sweeney is taking advantage. I'm not saying he's going to be like starting week one. I'm saying that he's going to take someone's job. And on a 53-man roster, that's a legitimate thing to make.
Good little story, yeah.
It's a good little story, and it's an interesting point to have to see developing, is that you get these players that can take opportunity and seize it. And that's why you got to be worried about a player like E.J. Gaines. There are players that our defensive backs were all sorts of different players at the bottom of it. This kind of turns that narrative to it. Maurice Alexander and Saran Neal have been getting time with the ones as what is being called a big nickel. That might mean more problems for Taron Johnson getting on the field consistently. Is Saran Neal being seen as a cornerback? If so, he's getting first team reps at corner, which means that a guy like EJ Gaines could suffer from that if he is not healthy enough to start up a game with his unit on Thursday.
This is what the McBean regime wanted.
This is what preseason football is.
Yeah, they knew that injuries happen no matter where you are, whether it's training camp, whether it's something in the middle of the summer. I mean, you want to have guys that are...
You need an offensive lineman to step up right now.
Exactly. You want to have enough at your disposal to where there is an injury, you can get a look at somebody who can actually be a viable option.
Wide receiver.
And put pressure on people that otherwise may think they have a job locked up. Those competitive battles bring out the best. They can bring out the worst, and they're everywhere.
And right receiver, now. Like if one of those guys goes down, there is a battle already at the bottom. We thought that the top six is already kind of decided, and for the most part, the snaps are dictating such. But if one of those guys loses a couple games, can David Sills or Isaiah McKenzie get themselves a job and at least a couple weeks of a paycheck? Or do they earn themselves a spot on the practice squad sort of thing? This is where the drama lives. And yes, I am that big of a dork that I'm going to be had talking about this, and I'm up and ready to go for it. I'm talking a lot about this preseason game coming up. There's a lot of things that I'm paying attention to here. Is it because there's going to be a football game where a score is kept for the first time since the Super Bowl for me? Because I don't really watch the Hall of Fame game. Is it because there's the first time since week 17 of last year with the Miami game where the Bills are playing a game where the score is kept? Maybe. Probably.
Wait. There was score kept in June.
No, there was not.
Yes, there was.
No, there wasn't.
Yes, the offense played the defense in a softball game.
I might hit you.
They played. It's a football game. They're football players. They kept score.
It is a charity game.
They kept score.
How many of them probably bring that up anymore?
We just talked about the softball game on Friday when Josh Allen came on.
All right, fine.
They kept score.
A football game since week 17 where the Bills are playing and a score is being kept.
Football game.
I cannot believe I actually have to be specific about this sort of thing. Because you had to be that guy.
Score was kept.
Yeah. You go ahead and drink your stupid water tea. I'll give you a tea. Just I wasn't going to hit him with the phone. You were going to hit him with the phone. I wasn't going to hit him with the phone. Anyway, you threw me off there, Kyle. Good job. But yeah, no, this is... I'm excited that football is, in the next closest sense, back. Joe and I had this little discussion when we did our over-unders on the nightcap. He said, football's not back yet. I'm like, it's kind of back. Games are being played where a score is kept again. Like, to me, that's football being back. To me, that's football returning. Because we always say it. We always say football's back for OTAs, for minicamp, for training camp. Like, it's the next step of football is back. And now preseason games are being played. Football's back. Yes and no. Like, you could still have people say, no, it's back when the regular season starts. Or what Joe said was, no, it's back when my fantasy points matter. But this is the next step of football is back. We get football games where there's a score being kept. With stories that you have to watch out for. With the makeup of a roster. How are players looking? How is the depth of your team looking? Are you going to come away without any injuries? For the love of God, please, no more injuries on the offensive line. I don't know if I want Josh Allen out there right now. I might say put him in a bubble. He would actually run fantastic in a bubble. You know, be able to absorb hits.
Get him to do bubble soccer during Sabres intermission.
I mean, the problem is he wouldn't be able to throw much. You're taking his best asset away from him. Attach a jugs machine to his bubble.
Problem solved.
Just about the same arm strength, right? Allen and a jugs machine?
I think so.
But yeah, it's interesting to see, though, that football is back, and I found a frustrating storyline as well. But it's a happy place for me that football is back because of the fact that the Sabres have been so miserable, and now they're up against cap, and they are bringing everybody back from a 27th place team, it seems. Did they lose anybody? I know, right? You have to think about this. They traded Alex Nylander. Jason Right, you lost a guy that actually scored double-digit goals for you. That's what you didn't bring back. You brought back everything else. Zemgus Girgensons got 1.6. I hate everything. The Sabres make me miserable right now. And I think that's why I'm so happy that football's back. That's probably the biggest thing for me, is that biggest takeaway is that the Sabres are making everybody so miserable and angry, and the arbitration cases have also hurt everyone's head because the Sabres go through arbitration with Rodriguez, and they almost do with McCabe, and they have to with Ullmark. And Remy Elie throws his name in there for some reason. But the Sabres gave him a contract too. Like, nobody really left except for Jason Pominville. He scored 16 goals last year, if I'm not mistaken.
That might actually have been the only name that wasn't shipped out via trade.
Alex Nylander wasn't a Sabre last year. I can't really count him as a name of someone that has come back. Yeah, I think Pominville's the only one. And he actually did things for you. So a bad team gets...
Danny O'Regan was not a Sabre last year, though.
No, he wasn't.
Played a couple games.
He played a couple games, but that's not a Sabre. You got to be here for a lot of the year, or even at least half the year. Lawrence Pilot's a Sabre. How many games did Pilot play?
I think in the 20s.
Oh, okay. I'd still count it.
33.
No, see, there you go. Almost half the season. Yeah, they lost Pominville. From a team that finished 27th. They lost 16 goals.
And now one of their most rumored potential trade partners, for cap relief.
Yeah, as, thanks.
Taking a flyer on a buyout from the New York Rangers. Kevin Shattenkirk reportedly joined the Lightning today on a very, very team-friendly prove-it-or-try-for-agency-again type deal. Less than $2 million for Kevin Shattenkirk. Former very highly sought-after free agent, I believe, the year after he was a deadline acquisition for the Capitals.
Yes.
In 16-17, hit free agency and got 7 years from the Rangers. 6 or 7 years.
6 years.
And only lived to see two of them. Barely saw the second with injury.
I think it was only a four-year deal.
Was it?
Yeah. It was high price point on money per year, but it was not a ridiculous term year of – you know, how many years it was going to be. The term was not all that crazy. I thought it was only a four-year contract.
I think you're right. I did see something very quickly. I'm pulling up Cat Friendly. I believe it looks like it was a four-year 26.6 with a big signing bonus.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of money up front.
Okay, so he lived to see barely half of it then.
Yeah. Pretty much, no, exactly. Half. He got 2 years.
If he did, it was the start of the season before missing the rest of it.
Yeah, he got 2 years.
Yeah.
Which, nice job. You sign a guy for 2 years and you already bought him out. Like, come on, what are you doing? But like, the Rangers are weird to me. Like, they buy out a guy like Shattenkirk, they sign Panarin, they throw money around. Yet they're supposed to be trying to rebuild. Yet now they got Kapokako, and they're like, nah, screw the rebuild. We still got players. Like. They're a weird team. They never commit to anything. They're this playoff team, yet they can't make the Stanley Cup that often. Like, they don't commit to anything. Commit to something, Rangers. Commit to it.
No, they had a serious core, too.
They did.
I think 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, they shipped off Zuccarello, and then...
when they were coming off the Cup loss
yeah.
to the Kings in 2014. Mm-hmm. 2012? I'm blanking now. Alec Martinez is... series-winning goal, 2014.
Yes.
Because the Kings' first cup was against the Devils.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is very true. Because that led to Parise leaving for Minnesota.
Yep. Derek Stepan, JT Miller, Dan Girardi.
Matt Zuccarello.
Oh, gone. Mika Zibanejad. Even more. Lundqvist has been a constant. Yeah. They had a serious core now, like Stepan's in Arizona.
That first four, they're all gone.
Stepan's in Arizona building a core with Phil Kessel and the rest of those boys down there and the young guns they have. I mean, honestly, you can take a chance. If you didn't know where any of those former
Ryan McDonough.
If you didn't know anything about hockey other than the fact that the Lightning and the Rangers seem to always find a way to each other's players, you can just safely assume that anybody that played from the Rangers from about 2012 to 2016 is probably in Tampa Bay right now.
Yeah. That's just how it ends for them. Like, even back then, Ryan Callahan was a good player for them.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by Ottawa, the way, right? Ottawa thanks, relief. Ottawa. Yep. Appreciate the help that you gave to them. I hate you. Melnick, sell the team, because now you're just making things worse for everybody. Nobody likes you, Melnick.
Yeah.
Nobody likes you.
Tampa sent out two former Rangers with the Callahan and then JT Miller. To Vancouver.
Yeah. And yet, they still need to re-sign Braden Point.
Yeah, we have to talk about that. Braden Point, Mitch Marner in Toronto, Matt Tkachuk in Calgary, who has been talked about like next to none this entire offseason, Kyle Connor,
Mikko Rantanen,
Patrick Laine, Mikko Rantanen. That's six top tier, like I'm expecting to make $8 to $10 million type players that still don't know what kind of contract they're getting, and we have a season to play in just a little bit, like 2 months. Less.
I don't want to go be all Jeremy White here, but I need to be like Jeremy White here. Where are the offer sheets? It makes too much sense.
Yeah, everything is going
completely
too much sense. Stale.
I hate how scared hockey GMs are.
For a month, what was the last rumor we heard in hockey? Like real
that
Marner
was going to get like $10 million from somebody. We thought it was going to be the Islanders. Remember?
Yeah,
And then somehow the Sabres name got attached to one of those rumors. And we're like, we don't have the money for this. What are you talking about, the Sabres? The Islanders don't even have the money for this. The big report was that one team was going to throw 10.5 at Marner. And yet, we got none of it. I think it was Pagnotta from the fourth period who ended up on that. Brock Besser's another one.
I was just going to say that. Saw the name. Is this his third year?
He's an RFA.
Yeah. He's looking for $7 million per TSN very early on Sunday morning.
That's pretty acceptable, actually.
There actually was a report from The Athletic that I'm seeing on RotoWorld that came down last night very late that the Leafs reportedly offered Marner anywhere from $9 to $11 million, which I think we anticipated, with the variable now being term. Sounds like they're close. We've heard they're close for a month and a half now.
Why are we letting these teams get away with this?
And all the while, they're able to ship contracts out to teams that are playing for nothing. Like they're just kind of Ottawa. Biding their time. Yeah.
Here, take the Zaitsev contract. I hate you, yeah. Ottawa.
There's no pressure being put on these teams.
If not for James Dolan, you'd probably – if not for James Dolan or Dan Snyder, you'd probably be the worst owner in sports. Because at least Melnick isn't putting on the facade that they're even trying to compete right now. Like, he's just showing that he's a cheap b-hole, and meanwhile, Dolan's like, oh, we're actually trying to compete. Really? What are you going to do? Snyder just continues to be super cheap and say, hey, we're trying to compete, but we're not going to spend any money on it. What do you mean, what? At least Melnick's just like, nah, we're good. And then you get the great quote from Pierre Dorion on last preseason, we're a team. I'll still never forget that.
That or the video put out where he was sitting very awkwardly with Mark Borowiecki, of all players, yeah. to sit down and talk about the future of your team.
That's like asking – that's like, by comparison, the Sabres tank. Pegula sitting down with, like, Andre Mazaros. Like, what are you doing? Man, that was an interesting offseason for them. And then – they finished in last place, as everyone saw coming.
Oh, yeah.
Without the first round pick.
Icing on the cake would have been Colorado winning the lottery.
Oh, of course, but they still got Bowen Byram out of it.
True. Very true.
Because Chicago was just like, nah, we're good for some reason. Back to the Sabres on all this. Now something has to be done. They have no money. This is literally now a case of there has to be something done. What can you do? And I'm going to say it. I don't want to hear anything about a buyout. Yes, Sobotka is butt cheeks. Yes, Scandella has been terrible from last year. First year, he was a Sabre. He was actually pretty decent. But he fell off a cliff. Yes, you can buy... I don't think you actually can buy out Bogosian anymore because he's actually injured. But people would have thought about that as an option. Like, if you could, they would, those fans. Why prolong the cap into next year? Why make it next year's problem? I had mentioned this sort of thing. Actually, when we were talking about the buyout period, where I was like, that money kind of adds up pretty quick. Because that's the contract of, say, you know, like one of your bottom six players. And I use the name, like a Johan Larson or something like that. And we've seen now for the Sabres, that money adds up pretty quickly. And now there's actual consequences. Why have that problem for next year when you have to sign Montour, when you have to sign Reinhardt again to another deal? Like, no, let's not make that problem at all. I'm good. I'm pretty sure Mittelstadt's contract runs out too. It does.
Should.
Because they burned the first year on the last, like, seven games. Then last year happened. This is year three. Yeah, Mittelstadt's contract runs out too. So you need to get a bridge deal for that one. Yeah, no, let's put buyout money into that. That sounds like a great idea. No, just waive the players that are trash.
hope Sapoca goes play in Europe and get that cap number off your books entirely. But at the same time, make a move so that you don't have to worry about that being the hope. Because you still need to do something. And you still need a top six forward. I've been saying it for the longest time. Something's going to happen. I don't know what. That's me playing it safe, saying I don't know what. But something has to happen. There's no way they roll into the season with 10 defensemen. Right? They can't. Right?
You'd hope.
You'd
no,
think.
No, they can't.
You would think. I don't even have to say the word hope here. You would think. And yet, if they do, it's just another miserable sequence in the Sabres' recent history. All I know is that it really annoys me, though, when someone says, they shouldn't trade Ristolainen because look what happened with the Ryan O'Reilly trade. No, that's not related. And the minute you get scared because of one flawed move, means you shouldn't be an NHL GM anymore.
No, it hasn't that means get the, why should it that, stop yeah, the fans? Look that means, at what he's done this offseason.
That means get the hell out of my office.
Yep.
If there's a GM like that. I mentioned David Poile because, and George McPhee. Poile traded legit a first-round pick for Paul Gostad before. That didn't stop him.
That happened, folks.
That happened. That was a real thing.
Yeah.
The Sabres got a first-round pick for Paul Gostad. I don't know if it was drunk dialing or something. We just mocked the a couple podcasts ago. We were talking about,
hey, Stan, it's Kyle Dubas.
That's right.
We'll trade you Nylander for Yoki Haru.
Like, we literally did that. So an NHL GM should never be afraid of that. Fans should never have to use that as an excuse for not wanting to trade a player out. Yes, I know Ristolainen has kind of become a punching bag. Yes, I know that Ristolainen would actually be serviceable with less minutes. And a coach that, if they say that, actually mean it. Because what did we get with Dan Bylsma? Yeah, we got to lighten his workload a little bit. Nope. Phil Housley comes in. Yeah, we might need to lighten this guy's workload. Gives him more minutes somehow. It's fantastic. The curious case of Rasmus Ristolainen, who should never be getting these 25 minutes plus, and yet continues to get 25 minutes plus. Because what choice do they have? Well, now this Rasmus Dahlin kid comes in. I hear he's quite the dandy, and Ristolainen still gets 25 minutes a game.
Maybe they just forgot they had the same first name, and he kept just saying Rasmus go. And Rasmus, and then the first just to jump. Just get up the ice.
He just uses his bigger friend. Out of my way, kid. And he just pushes him back onto the bench.
I never know.
You little twerp.
Why does that tall guy keep going out every time I say Rasmus?
When I say Rasmus, why is 55 the one skating out there? He pushed me aside, coach. We're coming up with these stupid scenarios today.
It's August 5th, whatever it is.
We're talking about Frank busting through drywall, my hat exploding about Chad Kelly, and now Rasmus pushing Rasmus so that he can get more minutes on the ice.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to the Leftovers Podcast. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, we've been at this for too long with not a lot of news. Something needs to happen, or the season just need to get here.
I think that some real football needs to be played, honestly.
These are the real dog days.
The first step. And honestly, I'm going to go ahead and say it. I don't think Thursday gets any better with our loopiness.
No.
Because the pod will get a maniac attack, and you know that he will embrace every silly bit of what we're doing now. Maybe even amplify it. Maybe even encourage it. And I'm for it. So thanks for listening. Appreciate it. But you know what might help, though, Kyle?
What's that?
You know, there's this playoff push going on in some ball. And a 3-up, 3-down That hasn't happened in a while, as a matter of fact.
No, it is not.
Might be a good time to bring it back.
I am all for it. I am always all for it. It has been a while. It might have been a month. It could have been a month. We've had a lot of Monday guests with football
coming
back.
We've had a lot of Monday guests, yes. We talked to Josh Reed lately. Oh, that was Thursday. That was Friday, actually. Wow, I'm stupid. But you weren't here for the last Monday show. That was me and Frank.
That's right, I was not.
So we've had you guys on assignment lately. That's what we're calling it. And I'm assigning Frank to bust through some drywall.
All right, I may not remember how this segment goes very much, but I do remember we start with the downs. Because we realized you guys appreciated ending with some ups.
Yes, it's always good to end with some ups, you know.
All right, so let's just get down to this. Go. Look, man, we were an hour late recording this thing.
I've been up since 4 a.m.
We're 2 months deep into this summer. The Sabres are taking years off of Derek's life as they do nothing and continue to bring back pieces now, from a roster that got 76 points.
And now I'm just going to say it. I'm thinking about jokes.
Why?
Ending on and off. I just remember that Paul said something about his little unit today. Just go.
All right, Red Sox fans, close your eyes. David Price, yet again,
they're only listening. Why would they have to close their eyes?
You can close your eyes and still listen.
But what does that do? You're trying to tell them to avoid what you're about
Shut
to
Shut your mouth. Shut your mouth.
That sucks when...
Shut your senile mouth.
Sucks when it's flipped around on you, doesn't it?
David Price, yes. He was shelled by the New York Yankees again. Water is wet. The sky is blue. David Price...
But is water wet?
...is the definition of a man who lives in the House of Horrors when he has to face the New York Yankees. 2 2/3 innings pitched yesterday, allowed 9 hits, 7 earned runs, in a New York thwomping of the Red Sox. He allowed 2 homers, walked 2 Yankee batters. The Yankees are his most notable kryptonite in his long career, dating back to 2008 when he debuted as a reliever in Tampa Bay. He has a winning record, oddly enough, against the Yankees in his career, 16-15, but that comes at the expense of a 5.04 ERA in 259 innings pitched. He's allowed more hits per inning than he's thrown against New York, 285, and has allowed 38 home runs.
Damn. Yeah, that's... What's this going to do? Because I know Boston's been sliding a little lately as well.
They are in an 8-game losing streak.
That's not going to help their chances.
They're on an 8-game skid. Game and a half, maybe, if I recall correctly, behind Tampa for the second spot in the East. New York is just a runaway. And they're part of down two. But it's sort of a mixed down number two because they're just – it's amazing what the Yankees have been doing this year. And for all the hate they can get, just being the Yankees outright, what they're doing this season is actually pretty impressive. Because yesterday they lost 2 more players, in Gleyber Torres and Gio Urshela, who's been a renaissance project on his own, filling in time for players who were already injured. He joined them yesterday along with Gleyber Torres. You could honestly probably make a pretty competitive lineup, if not an all-star team, out of the players that have donned the pinstripes this year that currently are not seeing the field. Gleyber Torres and Gio Urshela yesterday joined Greg Bird, Gary Sanchez, Edwin Encarnacion, who was acquired in season from the Mariners. Miguel Andujar has been on the shelf all year. Giancarlo Stanton, center fielder Aaron Hicks, Luke Voit, Luis Severino, CeCe Sabathia, lefty Jordan Montgomery out of the rotation, Jonathan Lasagna.
What?
It's not his name. It's just his nickname. It's Jonathan Loisaga, I believe.
Okay.
And relief pitcher Dellin Betances. They have an 8-game lead with those players very seldomly having seen the field this entire season. They are tied for the best record in baseball with the Dodgers in terms of win percentage at .649.
All right.
And a couple months back, they had some injuries. Obviously, they've been dealing with it all season. A couple months back, a guy like Gio Urshela fans were wondering how you could put this guy on the bench when your stars get back healthy. Well, the problem is they never got back healthy, so they just played and played and played, and now they're getting hurt, so it's another test for the Yankees with 2 months left in the regular season. The fact that they built this kind of lead, it's only going to benefit them because they can get away with so much more in these last few months of the regular season.
Yeah, their torrid start to the season really was something that has helped them. You know, they actually are taking advantage of a good start to a season. Looking at you, Sabres.
That's right. So, good for you, Yankees. This is a season that will probably go down in history for not only IL time, I would imagine, spent, or games. That's a good stat I've seen before. Games lost by a team for their roster. This is going to be one of those competitive years where you may see a record broken. And then down number three, the Phillies. I've had them here before. Their odd season just rolls on. They had a game against the White Sox where they had a left fielder pitching and a pitcher in left field because of double switches.
That was actually pretty cool.
Did you see the Vince Velasquez throw out a guy at the plate?
Now, the thing is, pitchers are known for having lively arms, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I guess it doesn't really shock me that it happened, but it was still impressive that he was able to do it with the velocity and the angle of playing the ball, because that's something he's not used to doing. But, I mean, I would hope a guy that is paid to throw a ball very hard at a plate could do something like this.
Vince Velasquez hasn't been the greatest pitcher for the Phillies in his tenure, but he's done some weird stuff on the field. He's thrown out guys from left field. Last year there was a swinging bunt where he's a right-handed pitcher. He got hit. Oh, I'm sorry, it wasn't a swinging bunt. He got hit on his throwing arm on a line drive. The ball ricocheted towards the third baseline. He took his glove off, picked the ball up with his left hand, his non-dominant hand, and threw the base runner out, or the batter runner out.
That's just, he's just a freak athlete there.
He's done weird stuff except exceed on the mound.
So now, speaking of the Phillies, though, on their down, today there are talks about a story from the Philadelphia Inquirer. This was brought up on the morning show, and...
Oh, this.
Yes, first off, this is something I think that the public needs. As Philly fanatic might be a free agent. I've got too many questions about this. I really do. And I don't think we have all day for this.
That is
my first question, though, is
Pandora's box.
My first question, and the only one I'm going to ask, is I'd imagine he just becomes the fanatic, right? He's no longer the Philly fanatic because he would not be a part of the Philadelphia Phillies. Can he cross sports? Could he be the mascot for, I don't know, like the 76ers and stay in Philadelphia? And then he can remain the Philly fanatic? Can he traverse cities and go across sports that way? And the next thing you know, Billy Buffalo has somehow been replaced by the fanatic?
Ugh.
Yeah, that wouldn't make sense. Or say the Bronx Bombers got a fanatic on their team, and now the fanatic is wearing pinstripes. Could he be the hockey mascot for one of three teams that doesn't have one? I've got too many questions. Too many questions. Does he become a Caniac? A bunch of jerks? I said,
isn't their mascot a pig?
I don't think he's a mascot, because they have a mascot out on the ice. But if you're talking about Hamilton the pig, he's just like kind of like the rally pig of sorts. I don't know.
Oh, the rally.
But there's not a
the rally hog.
Yeah, but I don't know if that mascot is a pig or not, though. I don't know. I just know that they did fun celebrations when they won games, and it pissed off Don Cherry, and it made me happy. And I remember it was the Hurricanes, and they never are supposed to allow me to smile about them because 06. Anyway, I said I had one question, and I asked like 14. See? That's what happens with this.
That is what happens.
A mascot free agent. Are there offer sheets? Can you match? Or is it just unrestricted free agency? Can you trade rights?
Well, a guy
what would
like,
it cost? Is it a conditional second?
Well, Nate, hey, come on. Hey, a guy like Chance, he's been in the league for 2 years. He can be an RFA. You can offer Sheet Chance out of Vegas.
Exactly, yeah. And like,
but I mean, the Philly Gritty, Fanatic has Gritty's decades.
Gritty just got through his rookie year.
That's true. I mean, the Philly Fanatic has decades of experience. He's a UFA, and he's going to garner a lot of 10. He's going to garner a lot of 10 and 5 UFA, rights.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
It's going to be tough to pry him from Philadelphia. Mascot. It's going to be a big offer.
This ridiculous episode has now gotten into in-depth mascot free agent talk.
Analysis.
Mascot analysis. Mascot analysis?
All right, anyway, down number three.
Was the Phillies.
Much less exciting than mascot discussions. But yeah, Phillies, just, and I was kind of grasping and clawing for a third down point this week. They're just weird. They had, everybody knows, Matt Klentak, the general manager, stupid money this offseason. They're 5 games over .500. They're the only current... They're the only team currently holding a playoff spot in the entire league. They're tied for the second wild card with the Washington Nationals with a negative run differential. And I mentioned this before. Run differential is interesting. The Phillies have a negative one right now, but 3-4 weeks into the season, the Reds were playing very poorly. It seemed like they were playing very poorly. The Optics, last place in the NL Central, but they had a positive run differential. So they win close and they lose big.
All right.
I mean, the opposite.
Oh, okay.
Right. Philadelphia is the only one out of AL, NL, wild card, second wild card, division leader that doesn't outscore their opponent over the entire season.
That is weird.
And they're also still leading the National League in home runs allowed by nearly 20. Pitching staff is just atrocious.
Bad. Yeah, that's not good.
But the ups. We have three ups.
Good. That's three up, three down. That's what it's called. I hope you'd have three.
I was on par. I made it even. The Astros. Aaron Sanchez. Freshly acquired from the Jays. He and three other pitchers, including other former Blue Jay, Joe Biagini, who came over in the same trade, they combined to no-hit the Mariners on Saturday night, the second time in less than a month.
Why didn't the Mariners end up on the down for that?
That the Mariners have been... No, it's just too easy. They were 12-2, and now they're like 30 games under .500. They have a guy on the IL that ruptured his testicle. It's just too easy.
Add ruptured testicle to this weird friggin' podcast today.
To Monday, you won't soon forget. Anyway, Sanchez. It was his first start since being traded from Toronto. He came over with a 6.07 ERA. That was dead last among qualified starting pitchers this season. He led the Major Leagues in losses with 14. And then out of nowhere, he tossed six hitless innings before giving way to the bullpen for his first win in the midst of a no-hitter. Since April 27th. He had not won in over nearly three and a half months, and then was part of history. Lowered his ERA by like 0.3, and now looks like the latest reclamation project for Houston's pitching coach, Brent Strom, who has just been an assassin, just a wunderkind, a god for starters that look like
gods
they're
around now.
Yeah, seriously. Four or five starters that find their way to Houston. They just latch on to this magic. Whatever Brent Strom is putting in the Houston water, I think that's why teams are so afraid to trade with the Astros these days.
They don't want to give up a pitcher. The next thing you know,
Aaron Sanchez happens. Wade Miley happens. Charlie Morton happens. Colin McHugh happens. Ryan Pressly happens. You can even talk about bona fide proven superstars like Justin Verlander and Gerrit Cole. The things they've done since being brought into Houston really don't even compare to what they were doing in already great careers with teams like
Detroit.
Kind of makes
you intrigued about what they'll do with Greinke.
Exactly.
Who's had an up and down career himself.
The rich just got richer this deadline. And they have far and away become the World Series favorites in most people's eyes. They already were. But when you can add three arms like that, they're huge on spin rate. All three of those guys are in the top percentiles for some kind of pitch they throw. Aaron Sanchez, it's his curveball. He's going to throw that a ton more in Houston. Joe Biagini the same way. Good curveball. Throw away the fastball. Throw your best pitch. Their usage is going to change, and I mean, the track record speaks for itself. They're probably going to see a much better improvement in their optics and statistics just by being around that culture.
Dang.
It's crazy.
All right, then.
Up number two, I tweeted about this, Bo Bichette.
Yes, you did tweet about this.
.406 average, 2 homers, 3 ribeye steaks, and a cool .750 slugging percentage.
Did you just say ribeye steaks?
I did say ribeye steaks. In 35 career Major League plate appearances. He has a hit in all 7 of his big league games since his debut on July 29th. And much to the chagrin of some people that have been in my mentions. Look at this. You can't imagine thinking that Vlad broke out because it was Bo and he wasn't really just the Orioles pitching staff. Like, it's cool. These guys have hit together. They're going to be attached at the hip for the rest of their Major League careers. As long as they're in Toronto.
First off, your mocking voice is always consistently hilarious.
Thank you. I get it. The optics aren't there. I tweeted out some stats of what Vlad Guerrero Jr. and Kevin Biggio have done since Bo Bichette joined them in the majors. And there's always doubters. There's always naysayers. There's guys that are, oh, they played Baltimore. Of course they're going to hit well. Like, yeah, well, I understand that. I know Vlad's had a hot July. I know Kevin Biggio's been hot and cold. I get that. But I think it's cool. It's a cool story. It goes much deeper than the stats because these are 3 sons of 3 former major leaguers, 2 of which have been Hall of Famers, one of which in Bo Bichette, his father Dante, had a wonderful career, mostly in Colorado, perennial all-star, good outfielder for the Rockies in the 90s.
And they've gone up developing with each other.
They've been developing every step of the way, from the Fisher catch in New Hampshire in Double-A. We saw what they did together in Triple-A last year and the start of this season. And now they're all graduating, and they're together again. And this is the first dose. This was the first week of having Biggio, Bichette, and Vlad Guerrero Jr. in the same major league lineup. Bo Bichette goes out and hits .406. He starts on a 7-game hitting streak to start his career. Vlad Guerrero, Baltimore or not, hits .500 with 3 homers and 11 RBI in a week's worth of games. Kevin Biggio, he struggled this year. He's hitting around .216, but his average since Bichette has come up, .270, 2 homers, 3 RBI. I just think it's really cool. Bo Bichette's been thrust into the leadoff spot. His first game, he hit 6th, but the next 5 or 6 games or so, he was leading off, and he's getting on base, and he's disrupting pitchers. He's not stealing yet, but he's something to worry about because he's always on base. He can hit you a homer. He led off a game with a homer already, and he's a threat. He extends this Toronto lineup, and I've told you this before. I think they're a couple years away from being competitive in the AL East based off what it looks like now. They got to get their pitching in order, but those are 3 cornerstone pieces that you don't have to look any further to, that in the years to come, whether Bichette stays as a leadoff hitter or they move him into the 2-3 hole, you're looking at Guerrero, Biggio, Bichette in the middle of that Toronto lineup for the foreseeable future, and I think this was our first taste, and it was really cool to watch. And fans in Buffalo who, whether they affiliate themselves with Toronto or not, or they're fans of other teams, the fact that they all came through this system in your backyard is very cool to me.
And you should have gotten your chance to watch all of them. So
did you?
I did get a couple games, Good. Yeah. And it's been pretty cool to see this sort of thing. And you get a Buffalo connection
to it. It's not every day. You see these kin.
Yeah.
These sons.
The fact that it's able to have a connection to the city, it's pretty cool.
Absolutely.
And to be able to appreciate it on, you know, pretty decent monetary value to go to a baseball game in Buffalo. I'm not saying don't go. I'm saying go. Go get a Bisons game. I was kind of hoping that they would keep up in the chase for the division. But somehow Syracuse is suddenly becoming a problem. Oh, wait, right. They've lost all their players now. Don't lose to Tim Tebow. Come on.
You know who they're the affiliate of?
Who? Syracuse?
Syracuse?
The Mets, yeah.
That's right. They're part of up number 3.
They're the Syracuse Mets.
They're part of up number 3.
Not
the Syracuse Mets. The New York Mets.
The Syracuse Mets have Tim Tebow. They should never be on your ups.
Fair. So, the Mets deadline pivot. Breaking news. Is it looking smart? What do you think? They held on to Noah Syndergaard, held on to Zach Wheeler, brought in Marcus Stroman from Toronto in an absolute...
That's right, because I was thinking, why are the Mets trying to do things? So, I'm going to guess that because I said something that I shouldn't have, it's probably working out.
It is, and it's weird.
Why?
I don't know.
How?
For all the Mets stand for.
Your Mets. Start being the Mets again.
No, you know what? They are beating the Mets. I should take that back. Because even I know, a dunce like me knows that they've won, what, 9 of their last 10?
Mm-hmm.
And are suddenly, like, at, what, 20% chance of making the playoffs?
3 games back of the second wild card.
They're doing peak Mets.
How so? I'm ready.
You know how Bills fans get their hopes up and then it's just
crushed. Is this the in the hunt graphic?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or it's the Sabres getting off to this intense start. And everyone's like, yo, we're actually, like, we could do this. And then calamity. The Mets also specialize in this. So, of course, this is working. Until it doesn't.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes.
I think the most impressive part is they're doing it all without Pete Alonso.
What?
He struggled really bad.
What?
Really bad.
They've won 9 of 10?
They've won 9 of 10.
Despite Pete Alonso struggling?
Yeah. A guy like Vlad Guerrero, we go back to up number 2, where you see him not having that kind of jet lag from a home run derby, where he's boosted his batting average about 30 points since the All-Star break. I believe he went at around 245. He's hitting 279 right now. Pete Alonso's done the opposite. He is living out that fear that some players have when they're asked to go to the home run derby and they say no because they're worried that they're going to go into some kind of slump or there's a lasting impact on your swing. We don't know what it is yet for Pete Alonso. I haven't been able to watch a lot of Met games, but I do know that the stats say he's hitting 151 since that All-Star break with only 4 homers and 30 strikeouts in 73 at-bats. He's 11 for 73 since that first-place performance in a championship in the Derby.
Wow.
That might be the weirdest part. The pivot. The pivot before the deadline and holding on to your pitchers was odd enough through the baseball world for a curveball when the Mets didn't sell, despite where they were in the standings. And then to find the success without your rookie stud who was breaking first-half records is just another, like, throw stuff because it doesn't make sense. Like, things just don't make sense. Baseball is such a funny sport. The Mets were like 7 games back with Pete Alonso hitting 30 homers before the break. And now they rattled off a week straight worth of wins and then some. And the kid is not even hitting his weight. Baseball's funny. That's it. There's my notes. If you can see him, there's my notes. It doesn't make sense. I can write anything I want every week, and it's just like, 3 games back now, you're just short of 500, and what's happening? Your only source of offense in the first half is non-existent, but now you're winning.
You said throw stuff.
Yep, throw stuff.
Here we go.
It's crazy. You can't make it up.
I mean, I feel like you can. It's just nonsensical to make it up.
That's true.
So, yeah, you can't make it up. Look at that. Last podcast, we go a little shorter.
We stole this our
one,
hats.
This one, we threw our hats. And there was no hockey goals. Nobody scored 3 times. But thank you for listening to Leftovers Podcast, Derek Kramer.
And Kyle Powell.
And this loopy episode was brought to you by 4 Hours of Sleep. Get yourself 4 Hours of Sleep. Know that 4 Hours of Sleep is not a generally good idea and sometimes can often lead to stupidity at large. So yeah, there you go. What the hell am I doing? We're done here. Maniac joins us from Trainwreck Sports, joining us in studio for Thursday's podcast. I'm excited for that. It's always good to hear from him and get the blazing takes that Maniac can bring to us. He's been working hard out at training camp too, so if you're not following him, well, you're doing it wrong. So there's that too. You can also give us a follow at DerekKramer49.
And at Kyle_Powell2.
Thanks for listening. Preseason starts on Thursday. A football game where scores are being capped from the Bills.
Thank you for clarifying, because if you didn't say football, I would have just assumed the worst.
Well, thanks for listening, and talk to you later.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.